Thank you, Jim. I'm Israel, alcoholic. And yes, I have the distinct honor tonight to introduce our speaker. He comes to us from Chino, and lucky for us, he works here during the week at a very interesting job, I might add. I hope he goes into it because it sounds pretty cool. It says he builds casinos, which sounds pretty cool. And his home group is the Sunday Morning Big Book Study in Chino. And his favorite saying is, practice the pause. So please, everybody, give a big Valley Group welcome to Brian.
Thanks, Israel. I appreciate the warm welcome, and it's always great to speak in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. The one thing I learned when I was a newcomer is you're not allowed to say no. So I was asked a couple of weeks ago, so here I am. And it is just incredible the vibe you feel when the newcomer comes in the room, and we have so many tonight. I think it's great. I wish you all the best. I think you're the guy, you're entering into the best phase of your life. It just gets better from here, man. It keeps trucking, and just things get easier, and you start to let go, and you let God, and things get great. So I'll start with my story now. I've got a sobriety date of July 15th of 20. But I found out I was an alcoholic on April 23rd, 1971. That was the day I was born. I do believe I have had this in me my entire life. I've been irritable, restless, and discontent from the get-go. Before this meeting tonight, I figured I'd look it up. And irritable is having a tendency to be easily annoyed or made angry. That's certainly me. Restless is unable to rest or relax as a result of anxiety or boredom. And here I am tapping my foot, right? I was like that. Discontent, lack of contentment, or dissatisfaction with your own circumstances. So I certainly have throughout my life fallen into those three different classifications, sometimes all at once, sometimes in different portions, but that's how it goes. So starting back with my early life, I was the youngest of five kids. My parents came over from Germany, and it was a pretty normal life. I mean, aside from growing up in a German house with German accents and eating a bunch of potatoes and just weird stuff that being a German is, that's what I grew up. And a lot of people say, oh, yeah, of course you're an alcoholic, you're German, right? But I think it falls in every classification of people. The Irish drink a lot, the Italian drink a lot, the Scottish drink a lot, Mexicans drink a lot, Italians, everybody drinks a lot. So I don't think that has anything to do with it. I think it's more of it's a personal thing. It's certainly something you get from your heritage, but I don't think it matters where you come from. It's not, doesn't pick it out. So, and I'm not one of those drinkers where, you know, somebody comes up and says, oh, it started for me when I was early. I was 6 years old and I found a bottle of whiskey and my life changed. It didn't work like that for me. And then some people say I was a latecomer. I came in at 18. It actually didn't really become a big part of my life until I got in about my mid 40s. But as I peeled the apple back and I started thinking about it, my first blackout drinking was I was about 23 years old, and I woke up behind a 7-Eleven, and I was so shocked. I actually thought for a minute, okay, here it is. I've been abducted by aliens. There's no way. How did I end up behind a 7-Eleven? But come to find out, that was the first of many blackouts, and that it didn't mean anything to me at that time. After that, my drinking career kind of went on hold. And I had, you know, I drank a little bit. I drank on the weekends. I drank for special events, for work stuff and stuff like that. But it really, nothing really popped out at me that I had a huge issue with alcohol. It was just, I was just a regular drinker at that point. Then I had another blackout. I was about 25 years old. I went to a friend's wedding, and I probably missed all of it and woke up in a room and thought, well, that's kind of weird. The aliens were back or that, or I just got really drunk and I passed out. So, you know, it started setting up for me. Then life got busy and the drinking faded away, and it kind of went away, and it was just reserved to like Christmas parties and small gatherings. And even then, when I was drinking, people would go, whoa, dude, you can throw it back. I mean, that's some serious drinking. And then I wouldn't drink for a while. So in 2000, I married my beautiful, wonderful wife, who I'm still with now, 22 years. And she's the byproduct of two alcoholics. God bless her heart. She doesn't drink at all. She's a normie. She doesn't drink at all. Maybe if she drank, she found out she would be one, and she's way smarter than that. So my hat's off to her. But she doesn't drink at all. But while we were recording, we had a little incident, and we were coming home or whatever, and I got drunk and kind of punched the roof of my truck or something. She's like, you can't handle your alcohol. And that was enough for me to hear at that time. I said, okay, cool. Can't handle my alcohol, I won't drink. Then I had many years of just, you know, no big deal. I drank 2-3 times a year. It was really no big deal. And then this next part is where the, you know, the cunning and the baffling and the powerful part, because I know what happened as I look back now. It was just waiting for me for the right time. And the right time came in about 2015 when my work took me out of town during the week. And that's the cunning and baffling part. It kind of waits for you to get isolated, waits for you to get alone and says, okay, I think I got you pinned down now. And it started out pretty simple. It was, I'd go to Applebee's at night and I'd get, you know, something to eat at the bar and I'd have a couple drinks and then I'd go home and I'd have a couple more and it's, whoa, that was really a good night's sleep. You know, that really works. I was lonely. I was missing my family. And that's where the part where I start to see that, you know, it can really mess with you when you get alone, when that isolation kicks in. So, so that's kind of where it started at. And then it became a regular event, and some nights started at Applebee's, and then a few more shots at home, and then I'd sleep. Well, eventually, I left that job, and I went to work at a job where I actually got to go home. Then my addiction kind of turned the page to something else, and I got into fitness. Strangely enough, I got very fit, and I quit drinking altogether. Well, then the discontent part stepped in, and I wasn't making enough money, and my employer didn't appreciate me enough. And screw that, I'm going to get another job. And the next job landed me in Colorado. That was a pretty good gig. I was there Monday through Friday. I was home on the weekends. But there I could drink. I could go out. I could go to work. I'd go home every night. I'd have a couple of drinks. And you could start to see the pattern. I was starting to make excuses in my life. I was starting to change things around so I could keep feeding this irritable, restless, discontent disposition that I had. Let me see where I'm at. I'm sorry. This is my first time going through it. So I lived through it, but this is my first time reading through it. Then I went out to Denver. Then every night after work, I'd hit a little drink there and there. Then I had another change, and work brought me back home. And as I got back home, the only thing I could do is maybe I could have a couple of drinks at lunch. But the drinking was gone altogether, and I was miserable. And that is where the that's where the angry and annoyed person lived. I just couldn't get happy. I was just restless, irritable, and nobody liked me. So I got another change in employment. I said, hey, what the heck, I'll try this. We're out-of-town stuff again because it'll work this time. And I got a job, and I lived at the beach in Hermosa Beach in downtown L.A., and that gave me a chance to be away, to rest, relax, drink at night, never really addressing the true problem where I was lonely and I missed my kids and I missed my family. Looking back, that would have been so much easier to just address head on than to try to bury it in alcohol, but that's how I did it at the time. Now, the beginning of the trouble started in at a Christmas party in 2017. It's a pretty good story. We had a Christmas party for the company, and I decided I'd be Santa Claus and got my hair done. I got the blue contacts. I got the suit. I did everything. Before that, I said, you know, I better prime myself a little bit because this is going to be a tough thing to do. You know, a couple bottles, a bottle of whiskey, a good solid bottle of whiskey. So I remember going to the party, and I remember sitting there and people sitting on my lap telling Santa Claus what they wanted. And then the next step, I remember opening my eyes, and I saw a stainless steel toilet, and I thought, well, that's kind of weird, huh? And then an epoxy floor, and then a concrete wall, and I was like, oh, I'm in jail, right? I'm in jail. But Santa's landed his ass in jail, right? Merry Christmas. So I remember that was the first time I really thought, you know, this probably isn't normal. This probably isn't normal drinking. I sat there, and I was, you know, calling for the guard or whatever they're called. Hello, help, hello. And finally somebody came in. And in that time, I really wasn't sure. I didn't know if I got in a car and went drinking and driving and killed somebody. I didn't know if I got in a fight. I didn't know anything. All I know is I was standing there in an orange suit. I think I still had a Santa boot on. I could tell my hair was white. Anyways, I couldn't figure out. So the guy finally came in and said, hey, you know, what am I here for? He said, don't worry about it, man. You just couldn't make it home and we were worried about you, so we lock you up for a little bit, but don't worry because your wife has got you all covered. And I was like, oh, you mean the wife that lives 200 miles away in Palm Desert? And he said, yeah, she was here earlier and she's pretty hot. And I said, okay, so she's hot good looking or she's hot mad? And they're like, he's like, yeah, as a matter of fact, she's both. And I was like, ooh, this is bad news. My wife had to come. So I get out and I, you know, get all my stuff together in this plastic bag, and it stinks like urine. I must have pissed myself. And I get my phone, and it's somebody from work, a gal from work. She says, don't call your wife. Call me first. I'm going to call her. And she says, hey, don't worry. I came down there, and I told them I was your wife. You know, and I was there to bail you out. But they said, just let Santa sleep. He said, all right, he's safe, he's sleeping. And then he'd go home, so she left. Well, in the interim, my real wife was at home looking at Find My iPhone, the way I used to find my truck when I was growing up. Find my truck, she did find my iPhone. She noticed where I was at, kind of did a little bit of research, figured out I was in jail. So she called the jail and said, hey, you have my husband down there? And, you know, explain, oh, is he dressed like Santa? Yeah, he said, hey, don't worry, his wife was just here a couple minutes ago, and he's good to go. So, as you can tell, that was the beginning of me realizing that, hey, things, normal people don't usually drink to that extreme. So I went home the next day, and it was a tough one. And it's funny how God can do things in your life that you don't even realize. But I was very hungover. I was very disappointed in myself. And I just went up to Lowe's. And there was a friend of mine that I knew was in the program, been in the program about 8 years. Matter of fact, I kind of went with him there because I was his friend that didn't drink 8 years back. And I said, hey, I think I got a problem drinking. He did one of these, whoa, you think so? Because you stink right now like alcohol. I said, yeah, I got a problem, man. So he said, look, I'll come by the house. I'll pick you up tomorrow morning and we'll go to a meeting. And I was like, so I'm thinking, I'm going to go to this place. They're going to teach me to maybe drink a little bit less. How to control my drinking. It's going to be a great program. Everybody's going to be happy because Brian's doing something good finally, not screwing up. So he picked me up, and we went to – it was in Indio, California. It was an ABC club. And that's when I walked in the room and I realized I am not an alcoholic. I said, there is no way. These people in here, they're all alcoholics. It looks like most of them ain't worked, rough crowd. Gangbangers, all that stuff. And I just sat there. And I probably went 4 or 5 weekends in a row. And I listened. And I started hearing things. But I was like, you know, okay, whatever. I'm still not that. I mean, I haven't drank that much. I heard people shares. I'm like, I didn't wake up underneath a bridge. I wasn't homeless. I kept my job. I still got my driver's license. I'm good to go. So I dabbled in and out of the program. That was 2017. And it's just like it says, you try to quit and it gets worse. All of a sudden, I wasn't trusted at home anymore. All of a sudden, I wasn't trusted with my wife. My kids started being really concerned about me. People would follow me on Find My iPhone. It got really bad. I lost all the trust and the love that I had for my family in that time. And I was still going to meetings. I mean, I was going to meetings a couple, 2, 3 a week. At one point, I had the coffee commitment, which is probably one of the toughest commitments there was, because it was a meeting had about 150 people, and the coffee was too hot, it was too cold, it was too amped up, it wasn't enough. And then there was the tea. It's not organic. I need the blueberry kind. I need the sweet tea kind. It just made me crazy. And it was so bad for me. It was such a hard thing for me to grasp. I was actually taking the money from my commitment and buying a bottle of whiskey on the way home. I mean, it took me a while before it set in. And then finally, I did my first stint in rehab. And that was when enough was enough. And I did 30 days at the Betty Ford Center in Rancho Mirage. And it did me good. It did me good to get away for the first time in my life and kind of focus on Brian and who I was. But after about 2 or 3 months out of that, I started, you know, doing some outside research. I started drinking a little bit, started experimenting. And next thing you know, just like the book says, it came back, but even worse. So, my last run-in. I had left my house on Sunday from Palm Desert, California. Got on the freeway. Got off the freeway. Don't remember much of that. And high-centered my truck on an off-ramp. And I got a DUI. That was my first. I mean, now things are getting serious. So I got a DUI. I got a ride back to my apartment. The next morning, I got up. I called for an Uber. The Uber picked me up. First stop was the liquor store, and then it was a haul from Hermosa Beach to Palm Desert, which is about 150, 175 miles in an Uber. So the gal drove me home, and then when I got home, I said, whoops, forgot my wallet, and we went back to Hermosa Beach. So by the time I got back to Palm Desert in July, it's about 120 degrees, and I was drunker than Cooter Brown. I don't remember a lot of it, but I do know after I sobered up that my Uber bill was $1,500. That was amazing. The girl still sends me a thank you every once in a while. But yeah, that was pretty wild. Pretty big bill, especially when it was on my company credit card. So, well, they took my truck. I had to get around, right? I could alcoholically, I could justify using their company credit card to get me back and forth. So the sad thing was when I got home for the last time, I rolled out of the car and I passed out. But I passed out on the asphalt. And I got third-degree burns on about 40% of my back, to where it was so bad it was considered skin grafts at one point. So I ended up going back into rehab, back to Betty Ford. But this time I did it on my stomach with a robe on. I looked like the Big Lebowski. I couldn't wear anything. All I could wear was a robe. So I went back through it, but it's amazing. I'm thankful. I do not regret that one bit. If that's the tool that God used to give me the freedom that I have today, I'm glad for it. I got severely hurt. It paused my life for a moment, and it helped me to remember that if I ever think I'm a normal drinker, just remember that. I mean, that burn was horrific. I'd never had any pain like that. I couldn't move. My clothes would get stuck to it. Every day I would have to go into the nurse, and she would descale it and pull it back, and they put Silverdyne on it, honey, and it was at the time it was a horrible thing. At this time in my life, it was a wonderful thing, because it's the thing that brought me through it. It was the thing to finally open my eyes and said, look, Brian, this is a serious disease. It will kill you, and you don't have any more. I don't have any more outs. I know for a fact if I go out tonight and have one drink, I won't see Steven next Monday, that's for sure. I'll be down the road, and I'll be out. And that's it. I don't have one more out. So I'm grateful for that, for what happened in that time. But in that time, I also realized that I have to surrender. Surrender is a big part of my story. I had a lot of pride. I had a lot of ego. I thought I can do whatever I want. I've got a great job. I've got a great occupation. I can do whatever I want. It doesn't work like that. I've surrendered to a God of my understanding. And I set out on a vigorous plan of action. I walked, sometimes I crawled through the 12 steps of this program, but I've gotten through them. And, you know, as it's said in the spiritual experience, one of my favorite readings now that I came out here and joined this other group, quite often friends of the newcomer are aware of the differences long before he is himself. That's true. My wife said, I don't know what happened, but something's changed. You're not the same person I married. Thank God you're even better than the person I've ever met. I finally realized I had undergone a profound undertaking, a reaction to life, and such a change could hardly have been brought about by me alone. It was definitely a spiritual experience that I went through. I didn't feel it. It wasn't a bright light, but eventually over time, as I look back, I could see how God created the path for me to get to where I am today. I finally surrendered to the God of my understanding. I resigned. I quit as master of the universe, the guy that had to control everything. And now I just let it go. I mean, I can't. All I can control is Brian. All I can do is control myself. I've got a wife. I've got five kids. My kids are 21, 20, 18, 16, and 9. That alone is enough to get a person to drink every night, but not me anymore. Because I realize now that I let them do what they do, and they get to feel life, and I don't have to protect them. I don't have to stand in the void. It's their lives. They get to do what they do, and all I can do is help them and coach them through it. I can't rule everything. And I do have one of those jobs that requires me to be a supervisor, and I found that the steps in this program helped me through that as well. You don't have to be a dictator. You can listen to everybody around you, and you can be a shining example of how a person can be, how a great person can be. So, am I cured? No, I'm definitely not cured. As it says on page 85, we are not cured of alcoholism. What we have is the daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And that's what I do every day. Every day when I wake up, I find two things to be grateful for. I find two things I don't want to do. I ask God to go with me to go do those two things, and I let him do the heavy lifting, and I just go along for the ride. It's not always that easy. But for the most part, every day that I wake up sober, I have a pretty good chance to get through the day and make it to another one, which might be a better day than the day before. So I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad you guys let me share. I'm glad you invited me to come out. Thank you, Israel, for the reminder. And I think that's it. What do you want to do? Do we open it up for questions? Or we got any questions? Oh, go ahead, guy.
First, I just want to give you a hand, man, for sharing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. It wasn't easy. You know what? It was actually nothing. It was just, they just had come to find out the story was I was trying to go up the stairs to my apartment. I'd get up to the top and back down to the bottom and then back up to the top. And that kind of worried me a little bit, too. When I was sitting there in jail, I was like, you know, I feel a little bruised. So I thought maybe I got in a fight or got a car accident or something like that. But yeah, the sand. I don't think the Santa suit's around anymore. My wife's on the Zoom right now. I don't think it's around anymore. I think it's around. I'll do it now. I'll dress like Santa. I'll do it sober. You know, I'm going through a new one right now, a new pair of glasses. That's Chuck C. And then I read our big book and I read our 12 and 12. And then for me, I'm not that strong in reading, but I've really found his good tool is the podcasts and stuff like that and listening meetings and stuff like that. They really help me to calm down at the end of the day. And then, of course, you know, I pray before I listen to that. I ask God to come in and just show me the way. And then I make it through the night that way without very. And there are nights still where I don't sleep. I mean, that was where my battle started. I really just wanted a good night's sleep, but I still don't sleep. But I could still, at least I'm waking up and not coming to. I might wake up a little grouchy. I might need a 2.5 hour nap in the afternoon, but at least I'm not drunk, rolling around on my back, burning myself. So I'm grateful for that. You got anything else?
Appreciate your spirit. Appreciate it. How do you go about staying connected with your God to understand?
You know, what I do is, for me, I'm a Christian, right? I've always been a Christian for many years, but I pray and I meditate. I every morning when I get up, I pray to God and I say, God, come with me throughout this day. At the end of the day, I meditate and I try to listen to what God has to say. And when I come across something, I practice the pause. That's how I was introduced to my favorite saying. And I just take a minute and I'll say, God, this might be something I can handle or it might be something I can't, but I need you to help me through it. And every time it happens that way. So if I get out of the way.
So you practice step 11 throughout the day.
Yeah, throughout the day. Yep.
Yes. Did it ever affect your job as far as the point where it was made certification? Like
my job?
Yeah.
Well, what it did was it kind of ruined my credibility. I mean, I have been in my profession for, I just passed my 34th year. Thank you. I'm at the top of my career, for sure. I made it way further than I ever did, but I lost a lot of credibility because a lot of people, I wasn't sharp. I wasn't on it. It wasn't, and what was happening with me was I got to where, you know, we say in the book, you know, I'm drinking only on the weekends, drinking brandy. I got to where I'd say, okay, I'm not drinking until the end of the day, right? And then the end of the day would be lunchtime. I'd start to just make the day shorter, you know, and then. So, yeah, it just started to erode and everything. And then it did start affecting my work because one time I wrecked a company truck. Somehow I got away with that. I don't know how. That's the alcoholic in us, I guess. And then the next time when I got the DUI, they said, look, Brian, we're not going to fire you. No, we're going to fire you. You just can't drive our vehicle anymore. So, yeah. So,
thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. All right,
guy. To a newcomer who's just starting their journey of recovery, what advice would you give?
Oh, just stick with it, bro. Every day, hit your knees, pray to God, pray that the biggest thing for me was to let go of the fact that I thought I could control everything. And it's in our serenity prayer, you know. And once that weight is lifted off that you don't have to control everything, you can start to kick back and say, okay, stuff's going to happen. Bad stuff's going to happen. Good stuff's going to happen. But I can be in the moment. And there's no harm in crying. There's no harm in feeling through something because once you feel through it, it's done and it's gone. But what we used to do is we used to drink and we pound it down and we bury it, bury it, bury it. And then we pull it back up and it's just, it comes back and bites us. So I just say, just stay the course, pray every day and lean on God, and you'll get through it. Absolutely.
When it comes to surrender,
yes, daily. Sometimes every 5 minutes. Depends on the circumstance, but I have to. I have to let go of my own will and let God's will prevail. There, I mean, it's a tough one because I do have a job of responsibility, and I have to make decisions. But it's easier that I do it without pride and without ego, and I ask God to come in and help me with it, and it usually works out best. I practice these principles in all my affairs, and it helps me to get through a lot of things at home and at work.
I have a couple of years now, but my question to you was, my house.
Yep.
My certain stuff that you do to me, help out and give out suggestions as far as, what do you do when, something bad happens, a family member, passed away or anything like that, I have to do some meditation.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing for me is when I start to get a little squirrely, I will make that phone call to my sponsor, and I'll tell him, this is how I feel, and usually what my sponsor will say, well, hell yeah, that's how you should feel. Look what you just went through. But let's project to another 24 hours ahead. Let's go another 48 hours. It will be behind you. You have to get through that stuff. And I'm just like you. I've got ADD. It's to the max. But I've learned how to live with my ADD. I've learned to slow down. And I started it, for me, in particular to my ADD, I started with my driving. Just to run around town like a chicken with head cut off. I started slowing down in my driving. And believe it or not, that has slowed down my life incredibly. And then it's just listening to people, and it's manageable. It's a tough thing to manage, but I manage my ADD now, and I'm able to pray and meditate because I'm all over the place as well. Yep.
Hey, Brian, we have a question online.
Yep.
The question is, which step
oh, it's not my wife.
Most difficult?
Oh, four. Step four.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Was that my sponsor? Four was intimidating to me at first. I didn't really want to go backwards. I had a feeling that, come on, let's just move on. But I finally figured out that I can't move forward until I go back and recognize some of these character defects I have and some of these oddities in my personality, the good things and the bad things. There are bad things in my personality, and there are good things as well. So I had to break that apart. I had to sit down with my sponsor, talk through it all. And when I got through it, a huge weight was lifted because I understand me now. I understand how I work. I understand how insecure I can be. I understand how emotional I can be. And that's just part of who I am, and I accept that now.
So now I'm going to ask my question.
Yes.
Actually, it is about the fourth step.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious if you have any stories you could share with us about how the fourth step might have changed your perspective on the relationship.
As I went through my fourth step, I realized something, and it was something that came up from my childhood, and it kept coming back through as I went through, and I realized that I always had a feeling of insecurity, right, that I wasn't smart enough. And it was kind of a family thing, like my dad was from Germany, and, oh, you'll never make it in your trade, you'll never do this, you'll never do that. He passed away when I was about 21, and coincidentally, I've made it like 18 times further in my trade than he ever did. But it started to sit on me that I really felt like I was stupid. I took that in, and I allowed that to rent space in my head. I said, you're not very smart, you don't read very well, this and that. And as I finally start to go through and start to realize, I started having all these resentments. And why was I resentful? Because they called me stupid. Because they called me stupid. Because they called me stupid. I realized that's an issue. That's an issue for me. It's a character defect that I have, that I always walk around this earth with a chip on my shoulder thinking everybody thinks I'm stupid. And there's no reason for it. Now that I've let that go and I realize how bad that's messed with my life, it's freeing. It's like I can move forward now and know that that was one person. It's amazing to me how one person's perspective on you or a couple people can change the outlook on your life completely. So you go back through it and you realize that's wrong information. We need, you know, and I move forward from it. So hopefully that answers your question.
So just to follow on to that, did you, you said that one of the things that you realized was that in the relationship with your father, you got this message that you weren't good enough, or
right,
you weren't smart enough,
yep,
or you weren't fast enough.
Yep,
enough,
right, yep.
That stuff.
Good enough cabinet maker.
I'm giving you my list.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. We've all been through it, right?
I'm just curious, did you through that process happen to find where you might have been guilty?
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, as I went back through it, I realized that there were things that I owned in there, but I also realized the biggest one for me was to forgive my dad. He had died when I was 21. He died when I was, to me, that's young. I mean, I've got two boys right now. They're 20 and 21. I couldn't imagine. I don't hover over them, but I couldn't imagine what it would be like to lose a dad at that age, and I went through it. But what I had to do is I had to forgive my dad because he grew up in Germany, on the ground, and he had bombs dropped on him every single day. He ran for his life. So looking back as an adult at my childhood, I have to say, you know what, Brian, he was a little shit, right? And he didn't have any perspective on how to be a dad. He knew how to survive. That's all he learned as a kid. And he left Germany to come here to have a better life. And that was his, that's how he thought he was providing a better life. So I forgave him for it, and that was a huge weight that was lifted off me, so I carried that forever. So now I can move on in peace. I don't have to worry about what other people think. If people think I'm stupid, they're probably right, and that doesn't bother me either way. So stupid is, stupid does. So, anybody got anything else? Yes.
Coach, you have an excellent attitude to surrender.
Thank you.
And I wanted to know
I was in the program, but not really focused, probably for about 3 years. And until I really burned my back, I had a dear friend. I've got five or six buddies in the Coachella Valley that are just really close. We talk every day. And one of them sent me a piece about surrender. And I read it, and I said, I think that's the component I'm missing. My pride won't let me surrender to allow my God to do the heavy lifting. And it just took that one time to read through that and then start implementing that in my life, that I don't control the universe and I got to surrender. All I can do is go through life the best I can, one moment at a time, one day at a time, with a clean and sober head. So hopefully that that answered.
Thank you.
Oh.
Oh.
Brian, after my highlight of my drinking career, I had burned many bridges with my family.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, what was your process to rebuilding?
Yeah.
If they saw your drinking like mine
did. They did. And that's a great question. And, you know, to go all the way back, the drinking was actually fueled by a belief that I made up in my head that was not true. And that was the fact that I thought, since I was out of town and I wasn't there for my kids, I was the biggest piece of shit and the most horrible dad on the face of the earth. Come to find out, as I cleaned up, they said they never once thought that. That was all put in my head by myself. They said, you've always been the greatest dad in the world. You always will be. And now, in my drinking days, it got so bad that I wasn't allowed to carry any cash. All my accounts were monitored, all that bad. Now, it's not even a question. My wife is starting to like me more and more. You know, like she said the other day, you know, this is the best husband she's ever had, and she's had about four of them in me. We've been married 22 years, but this is the best one she's had. And then my kids have always been supportive. They've always been by my side. And I hope what they've learned from what they saw in me is that somewhere in those five kids of ours, the alcoholism might be hiding. And I just, you know, I try to be there for them. I try to explain it to them. They were there on my first birthday. We had a huge party. They got me a bunch of cool AA stuff. So they're very supportive, and they're very glad that they've got their father back. So, and my wife is glad she got her husband back. So, off the hook yet?
Almost. I have a couple more questions for you.
Okay. Hi.
I'm curious if you had any. You've got any stories you can tell us about an amendment you made that went different than you thought it was going to go?
Trying to think of something here. You know, I think a lot of them are, I'm still focusing on a lot of them. Like, I've made a living amends to my dad. He's dead now, right? And that is to change my life. I've apologized to my, you know, I've made amends to my family, my kids. And it's always, to me, it's always a squirrely conversation to go into, but it never ends up being squirrely. It always ends up understanding and, oh no, I can't, it's cool, I get it. You're a changed person now, so, and I'm still going through them. I still have a list of amends to do. I mean, it's something that we move on with, and as people come up, I have to apologize to them. And, you know, it's amazing when you go into it, you think how horrible it's going to be, but when you get to it, it's freeing and it's liberating and it lets you go for sure. So, yeah, I can't think of any that were, I can think of a lot of them that I thought was going to be horrible, but none of them turned out to be nearly as bad at all, so. Yeah.
Last question I have is, are you available as a sponsor?
I don't know if I'm quite ready yet.
Okay.
Yep. Just to be fair, I'm getting there, and I'll talk to my sponsor about it, and I'll let him make that call, because that's what I do. So. Anything else? Yes. Yes. Yep. When I have a, you know, my wife is a very level-headed person. I can bounce stuff off of her. When it's too much of a crazy alcoholic thought, I will certainly call my sponsor, and I probably call him once or twice a month, you know, with some stuff, and he says, no, you're thinking right, or he'll say, dude, don't repeat that again to nobody again. Let's just keep that one under wraps for now. So, yeah, I do bounce off my sponsor. The biggest thing for me is recognizing that that's probably not just a moment's thought. So.
What's next?
To practice these principles in all my affairs and to live my life like this every day. And, you know, what I have in the near future, I've got more steps to work with my sponsor. To get a sponsee would be the next step. And then to just continue to live and enjoy life. It's an alcoholic, not drinking. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's great. I moved here. I was very scared. This was my first time out of town. Sober. I've met some great guys since I've been here, and it's amazing. You know, my program goes with me everywhere I go, so I'm excited to see what the future has in store for me, and I'm glad to be here. So, yeah. Yes, sir.
Brian, I want to thank you. You know, I've lived in this city all my life, and I've been around the AA for a little while, and this gentleman came into a meeting, and he actually, I'm going to ask him a question, but I want to thank him for sharing tonight. I think he did an extremely... Everybody in the room is what it takes. An honest, willing, and open-minded picture of what it's been like for a guy, of what it's been like for any person in the room. And the way he described it, he kind of walked through it to where he is today, and that's the most important thing. So I'm going to ask him one question.
Yes.
You've been an inspiration to me. But I'm going to ask you to inspire everyone in the room.
Okay.
With the one word you can come up with, don't worry what it is, give me the most positive word you feel in your heart from being sober.
Oh, surrender.
There you go.
That's it.